I want to tell you a little bit about the work in McGilligan. And as I mentioned this morning, I've been there from around about 1981. I know I don't look that old, but there you are. I was about then, and I got into McGilligan. Limavady had a number of men who were prison officers and policemen, and when men were moved from one prison to another, they came to the local church, and Free Presbyterian Church, and that's where we benefited at one stage. Of course, they move on again, but there was one of the men said to me, "Why don't you try and get into the prison? There's plenty of people there." So I made an approach to the Northern Ireland Prison Service, and I was allowed to go in as what they call a visiting minister. And when I went in at first, my organist used to come in with me, and through all sorts of weather we trudged up through the prison. It's a fair walk, especially on a stormy, wet, wintry morning. It's a fair walk from the front gate up to the blocks where we hold the services. And if any of you ladies want to wash and a blow dry for nothing, come down to McGilligan. You see the effect that it's had on me over the years. But it's a real stormy place. It's very open. It's an ideal place to have a prison. You've got log foil on one side of it, and then around the rest of it you have MOD property. And more often than not, when you're down in the prison, you hear them doing shooting practice, all sorts of ammunition, law live rounds. So it would be very difficult to try and escape from McGilligan. One man did it at one time. He dressed up as a woman and got out. So he did through the visits. But that's been some time ago. Anyway, I've been there from 1981. The chaplaincy has progressed since that, because back in about 2007, they formalised the chaplaincy. So we have access to all parts of the prison. We have talked about computers, your brain being frazzled by them this morning. We have access on computers. We can know anything about anyone at the prison, that is. And we if you have to look up someone's record, you can do that. I don't do it. I do work on the computer, but I don't do that, because you meet fellas in the prison and you talk to them as you'd talk to somebody when you're meeting them on the street. When we went in that time, we were getting, believe it or not, between 70 and 80 men every Sunday morning. You know, it was powerful witness. And you sang well tonight, but you want to hear those men singing? My organist was with me. She played the squeeze box, and they were great meetings, powerful meetings. And men were saved, and our work was established in McGilligan. There's lots I could tell you, but I just want to tell you one story. And this happened in the 90s. I was visiting a lady in the town, in Limavady, and she wasn't a member of the church, but she'd come once or twice, and she was a friend of one of the members. And when I visited her, she said, "You know, if you're in the prison," and I don't know, wasn't aware that she knew that I was a chaplain in the prison, but she just said, "If you're in the prison, would you call and see Bobby Simpson?" That was his name. He's got himself into some trouble. That's all she said. So anyway, I went in to the prison At that stage, we didn't have the facilities and weren't formalised in the sense we are now, where we have access to all parts and access to all the records. But I looked about for this man called Bobby Simpson, and I couldn't find him. Now, there's a part, I forgot all about him, by the way, and some months after, I was in a part of the prison called Foyle View. It's a more open part of McGilligan, and when you go there, you're able to do things that other prisoners are not allowed to do. And in fact, some of the prisoners get out to do work around the district. I went looking to visit a boy one day in McGilligan in Foyle View. He says, he's down Benone. He's what? He's down in Benone. So I went out to the prison again, down to the caravan park in Benone, down to where the pool is, down there. And there he was, sitting there with a number of other prisoners. All those picnic tables and benches and everything else that, if you've been down there, you see, they were made and installed by prisoners out of McGilligan. So that place, Foyle View, it's a more open part. And I had a service in there at that juncture, that time. It was on a Thursday evening, around about 7:30 or so. I would have a service there. They were allowed to stay up or stay out, if you like, till about maybe 8:30 or 9:00. So anyway, I had the service, and it ebbed and flowed. Sometimes we had it in a snooker room. You had a number of people, you would have had about a dozen or so. And when it went down a bit, we might have just held it in the room of one of the prisoners. It's rooms they have there instead of cells. And this Thursday night, we were just having it in the room of one of the prisoners. And there's about 6 there. And the boy just happened to say to me, there's a boy sick up the Terrapin, that's what they call the place where they are. And he mentioned him by name, Bobby Simpson. And it clicked. And this was a good while after his name was mentioned to me. And I says, I'll see that man, I won't see him. And after the meeting was over, it was about 8:30 at night, I thought, now I need to go home, because it was near their lock-up time, and I was debating whether to go and see him that night or come down the next morning. I was determined to see him, but then I thought, no, I'm here, I'll see him while I'm here. And I went down, on down the corridor to another room, went into the room, and there was Bobby Simpson on a very high bed. It must have been a bed they got in from a hospital. People knew he wasn't well. They suspected he had cancer, although it wasn't diagnosed at that stage. And I went in. I said, Bobby, somebody's given me your name. And I couldn't even remember at that stage who it was. I thought it was someone else. But anyway, I spoke to Bobby about the Lord, and I had a word of prayer with him. He says, Bobby, I'll come down and see you tomorrow morning. That would be Friday morning. So anyway, I left him, came down on the Friday morning, and Bobby said to me, you know, I got saved last night. I had prayed, there was a man in here, and I know the man. He's a tradesman. They employ tradesmen in the prison to teach prisoners trades. And this man had been recently converted, and he'd been speaking to Bobby about being converted. And Bobby said to me that Friday morning, I was praying that God would send somebody to show me how to be saved. Well, that's amazing. I'd forgotten all about the man. Couldn't remember the person that told me about him, I thought it was someone of the same name as him, but it so happened his name was mentioned that night. I had spoken to him, he had come to the Lord that night, he had been gloriously saved. Why was Bobby in prison? Bobby was born and brought up in Limavady, educated in Limavady, joined the Royal Engineers, a very elite part of the army, and he was in many parts of the world with them, and in many a hairy situation. He was telling me about different circumstances that he had found him in, himself in at times in the Royal Engineers. Bobby had come home and had joined the UDR, and when he joined the UDR, this is not a slight on them by the way, but he got involved somehow or other in drink and drugs. And he was so involved in that to the extent that his marriage broke up. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but the lady who mentioned him way at the beginning was his mother-in-law. He was married to her daughter. She didn't tell me that. I found all this out later. And Bobby had taken up with a younger woman and was living with this younger woman. And that young woman had actually come up through the Sunday school in Limavady Free Presbyterian Church. And in spite of all that she'd been taught and brought up in, there she was, living with a man who had been involved in drink and drugs, and his own marriage had broken up. One night, Bobby came home to the place where he was living with this girl, and he was very much the worse for wear. In fact, from reports that I have got, he hardly knew where he was that bad. But when he went in to where he lived, he found his partner, the girl that he had taken up with, in bed with another girl. And that other girl was also brought up through the children's meeting in Limavady. She was a lovely little girl. And there she was, living in heinous sin. And Bobby went that mad. He was clean mad. He had a sabre from his regiment. And he took it and he stabbed the girl to within an inch of her life. That's the girl he had taken up with. And of course, she was brought in to Alton the Galvin Hospital, and Bobby was put in prison for that. I know all those details because the girl that was looking after the young girl in intensive care was a member of my church in Limavady, so she was filling me in, not disclosing any patient confidentialities, but she knew who they were, she knew the background, she knew what happened, was able to fill me in with all that had happened. And Bobby was in prison for that. Now, it was ascertained that Bobby had cancer. He was in the cancer hospital before it moved, Beaver Park, before it moved to the city hospital. And I was up seeing him there. Some of the governors went up to see him. He didn't belong. There's people that don't belong in the prison. He didn't belong. He was a gentleman. He was in prison rightly for what he did. But there are prisoners and prisoners. And there are boys, you know, they'll be back in prison again. But there's some people in prison that shouldn't be there in the sense that they're out of place. There was an insurance man of the number one governor when he stopped in the prison in McGilligan simply because he went out and was involved in a road accident. Never set out to do it, but he was deemed to be at fault and he thought he would have got some form of community service, but he was put in prison. That's the number one governor's insurance man. He wasn't robbing the governor. He just happened to be in prison because of that. So Bobby was that sort of person. You knew there was more to him. And he got gloriously saved. He was one of the last people to get out of McGilligan, or to get out of prison in Northern Ireland, on what they call the Queen's prerogative. That is, if you're terminally ill, they will let you out before your time is served. And Bobby got out on May. He had a sister that lived in Limavady, and a beautiful big house. And she turned the living room, beautiful living room of her house, into a bedroom for Bobby. And Bobby spent his last months. He got out in May, and he died in August, and he spent his last months in his sister's house. And everybody that came to see me was well known. Born and brought up in Limavady, and of course he would have been known for what he got involved in as well, but everybody that came in to see him, Bobby had told him that he'd got saved and he'd come to the Lord. And I said to Bobby, would you mind, Bobby, if I did a wee gospel tract about you? He says, no, you do it. And I did it, and I showed it to his sister, and I showed it to his daughter. He had a daughter that lived in Coleraine, and they were happy enough with it. I took Bobby's funeral. It's an ex-serviceman's funeral, and a lot goes on at those funerals. I'm sure some of you have been at them. It's a big funeral, and Bobby was buried practically at my back door, where the manse is in Limavady. Behind the manse, there's a church graveyard. And just from my back door, maybe about 100 yards or so, there's a gravestone there with Bobby Simpson's name on it. And I have often thought, if I do nothing else in the prison, there's a man buried there who's in glory, who's got saved, who's got born again. We did a couple of thousand of the tracts and put them round the town, and some people weren't too happy. Some connections of his, they rang me up and gave off, and some connections of his had children going to our meetings and they took them away. And I said, well, look, I've had Bobby's permission, I've had his sister's permission, I've had his daughter's permission, and I said to his sister about them. He says, don't worry about them, you keep giving them out. And so it's an amazing story of this man. You see the evil of sin in it, but you can also see the glory of God's grace in it. Where sin abounds, grace doth much more abound. That's just one man. There's a few others. I've had a chap recently saved. He lives in Portrush, and I would like you to pray for Peter. When Peter gets established, he'll have some story to tell. He's having some struggles at the minute, but do please pray for Peter, that the Lord will indeed bring him through. Thank you for listening, brother. Let me make your announcements now.